You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hey, John.
Hey, Alan.
How are you?
I'm tired. It's been a long week.
That's a sentiment I can get on board with. And, you know, before we get too far into this, our illustrious producer, Devin Masters, unable to go with us this morning. He messaged middle of the night, wasn't feeling well. So, hey, unfortunately, no Devin Masters. But we will carry on. And, Devin, do get better because we miss you already. So, we've got a few things to talk about this week. Where do you want to start?
Well, we've been off a couple weeks because of Thanksgiving, so let's just start at the fact that the NBA is now over one-fourth done, and I don't think any of us could have guessed, I don't think anybody could have guessed that the conference standings would be how they are now. Utah Jazz are now 10-12. They are 13th in the West. Not only are they 13th in the West, but they're still above Houston. I don't think anyone saw that coming. So
nope.
You have all these teams that made the playoffs last year that if the playoffs started today, they would be out. And that is, let's see, not only Houston and Utah, but San Antonio, New Orleans, Minnesota, they're on the outs looking in.
And remind me or correct me if I'm wrong, I thought I saw somewhere that the Jazz have played the most road games of anybody in the NBA, and they have the best road record in the Western Conference.
They have played the most road games, and their road record is 8-6.
Which I think is best in the West.
Yes, it is. There is no other team in the West that's won two more than they've lost on the road. So, yeah. That also
Something
means
to be
they have
said
one
about,
of the worst home records.
Yeah, exactly. If the Jazz could right the ship at home, hey, we'd be talking about a completely different team right now.
Yep. In fact, the only other team that has four more losses than wins at home is Phoenix, the 4-17 Phoenix Suns. So they're the second, they're tied for worst at home, but they're the best on the road in the West. So maybe these road games have been good. Another stat I saw, which might make everything feel a little bit better. Andy Larson tweeted this out. He said games where Donovan Mitchell has missed part or all of the game due to injury, the Jazz are 1-6. And when he is able to play healthy, just fine through the whole game, they're 9-6.
Yeah.
So maybe things aren't quite as bad as they look right now. Really tough schedule, a lot of road games. Donovan Mitchell's been injured for a lot of it. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at it, and there's another positive or negative, however you want to take it, you could look at. There's a few season series that have already been taken care of for the Jazz. They're 0-2 against the Pacers. That's over and done with. They're 2-0 against Boston. That's over and done with. They have played Memphis three times and are 1-2. I don't know if they play them once more or not. I can't remember. So early on, they're getting a lot of these season series with teams out of the way.
They get Memphis one more time in March.
Okay. So we don't have to worry about Memphis till March. Maybe they can tie it up, get it all set up, you know, that series tied up in March. But we don't even need to look that far. But the point I'm making is they've really had a lot of series going on with a few different teams right now. And I think it'll be nice. I'm happy to put the Pacers in the rearview mirror for one.
Yeah.
Boston would be the positive you look at because they beat them both times. But that Pacers series, 0-2, and neither one of those games were close. Not even remotely close.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, glad that's over with. It was almost
yeah.
the identical score, except they played even worse at home.
Yeah, they did. So, all right. Before we get on to the big news, let's look ahead. We've got Charlotte tonight. So anybody listening, if you're listening today, Friday, November 30th, the game tonight in Charlotte, and then at Miami on, is it Sunday, I believe? and then San Antonio at home and Houston at home. Thoughts on these four games coming up?
Charlotte's going to be tough. They're playing well. They're 8-3 at home. They would be in the playoffs if they started today in the East. Kemba Walker's just been having an amazing year. Miami, I'm not near as worried about. Miami has stumbled out of the gate, and they don't seem to be going anywhere. So I would anticipate splitting these next two games. I would be thrilled if they are able to get a bump from the trade and take Charlotte, but I can't get my hopes quite up for that one. And then after that, they can have two home games, and hopefully also with this trade, they figure out their woes at home. So this is a week I could easily see them going 3-1.
And those two home games aren't gimmies either. I mean, regardless of how bad Houston's playing, at this point in time, is it safe to say I'm not even sure there is a game that's a gimme for the Jazz?
No, not for a while. I mean, even when you first looked at the schedule and you thought you had some gimmies, they wound up not being gimmies. I mean, we didn't think, what the heck is coming out of my computer? Is that my computer?
I am not. What are
Let
you
me.
hearing?
Oh, if you're not hearing it, then it's got to be my computer. Let me just close some windows. I don't know where that's coming from. Okay. What was I talking about? Oh, well,
You heard
not
it
for a
here.
while. The only gimmies they have is like Cleveland, Phoenix, Atlanta, Chicago, New York. We haven't played any of them yet. Miami is as close to a gimme as they've had all season.
You heard it here
So,
first, folks. The oddities of a Utah Jazz season and the oddities of the Germs guy computer. It's all good.
yes, it's all right here.
Well, and the point I'm trying to make, John, is that right now with the way the Jazz have played, and you tweeted out last week, Jekyll and Hyde, I don't know that there's any gimmies at all. I'm not sure I can count a win. I'm with you. 3-1 is optimistic this next four games. 2-2 is optimistic. 1-3 is just 1-3 is just as possible. So, especially
Yeah,
with the way things have gone.
that's fair.
But before we get into the trade, let's talk about what is going wrong with the Jazz right now. They're last in the league in 3-point shooting. Am I right?
They were 29th last I looked. I don't know if that's still
Okay,
the case.
29th. Okay, they're shooting the ball horribly, horrifically, however you want to put it. And you know that we're going to talk about bringing Kyle Korver home here in a minute. I'm not sure he's going to save it. And I'll tell you my thoughts on this trade when we get to it, but the Jazz have to make shots. This is a team that made shots pretty consistently last year, but they're not making shots this year. What's the difference?
They are 28th in the league in 3-point shooting. I was looking at some numbers last year compared to this year. So I'm just going to go through a few of these. I'm
Okay.
looking at efficient field goal percentage and 3-point percentage. Joe Ingles last year, efficient field goal percentage 60.9. This year, 56.4. Last year, 3 points, 44%. This year, 38.5. Ricky Rubio, efficient field goal percentage 47.6. This year, 43.3. Three-pointers, last year 35.2, this year 31.6. Dante Exum, last year 51.1, this year 41.2 for efficiency. Three-pointers, 27.8, this year 27 even. Donovan Mitchell, last year efficient 50.6, this year 47.6. Last year 3 points, 34%, this year 28.9. Jay Crowder, last year efficient 48.6, this year 48 even. Last year, 3-point percentage 32.3. This year, 29.2. Everybody is just being less efficient and less accurate this year. That's really what it
Which,
boils down to.
right. And so again, I ask, why? Where is it coming from? Because I don't know. It from the casual observer, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm speaking on their behalf, but I don't think the Jazz have had a lot of contested shots. They've had open shots.
That's true. They've had open shots, but it's their weak shooters that are getting the open shots. Teams are guarding Joe Ingles a lot better this year than they did last year. They're guarding Donovan Mitchell a lot better than they did last year. And they just do not care if Rubio or Exum or Royce O'Neal or any of those guys are open. They're going to let them have it. They'll run up on Jay Crowder a little. But all those guys are missing their shots, and that just makes everything harder for their offense. They need players to make their shots. They need more players out there that draw gravity so that the better or at least average shooters can get something. Because right now the Jazz have their scheme is built for a team that can hit shots, and they're not hitting their shots. They're not hitting
right.
open shots.
Okay, so let's move forward to the big news of the week. The Jazz – big trade happens. They bring in Kyle Korver. They get rid of, you know, they ship off Alec Burks and two second round picks. So I'm going to ask you, but I want to give my thoughts here for a second. First of all, Alec Burks, one of my favorite Jazz players since the day they drafted him. I loved him. I hate seeing him go. This one was hard to swallow for me. But that said, I read Woj's piece about it, dug into the numbers a little bit. I see why the move was made. I'm not sure I'm on board with why it was made with people as positive as they are. I'm not sure the Jazz did this for shooting alone. In fact, you're talking about Kyle Korver, who's not going to average a lot of minutes per game. And so I don't know how much that shooting really helps your lineups. But what's more is you shipped off an Alec Burks who still on his career and overall shoots the three pretty damn good. And so you just shipped off a guy who I still think was one of your better 3-point shooters. And so that move, for those reasons, it made it curious to me. Getting into the numbers, though, I felt like the money was the biggest upside here that the Jazz got out of this deal.
The money is good. They save millions of dollars doing this. And you knew that they weren't going to re-sign Burks, so they got
right.
something for him rather than losing him to free agency next year. They
right.
got another veteran. They got someone that has a lot of playoff experience. He was an all-star when he was with Atlanta. Burks himself was having a decent year as far as offense was going. His defensive numbers still just look bad, and for some reason his plus minus scores have always looked bad. And
right,
you know, it looks like he's doing fine out there on the court, but he doesn't make his teammates better. And yes, he is shooting 37% from three, which makes him one of the best 3-point shooters on the team. But all the other things going on with him, plus his salary, really made him the best trade piece. And so they got
right.
Korver, and they got a guy who can hit threes. They got a guy who is going to have to draw defenders whenever he's out there on the floor. It should make life a little easier for Mitchell, for Ingles, and for Gobert. Guys aren't going to be able to collapse on the plane as easily if they know they have Korver out there. You just cannot leave Korver open.
But how many minutes is he really going to get per game? Because I'm just not seeing – he's still fighting in a very clogged up position right there between he – and Royce O'Neal and, you know, their rookie, Grayson Allen, guys at that position that he's – and I get this. Quinn can mix up the lineups a little bit and move him maybe from the two to a three when you're going small. But how many minutes are we realistically going to see a 37-year-old Kyle Korver get per game?
Well, Alec was getting 15 minutes a game, so why not just give him those minutes? Korver gets 15
okay.
minutes a game.
Okay.
You know, he's probably going to play – he's going to play a lot more three than two. So he's going to be back up with Joe Ingles, although I would think that Quinn would try to get Ingles and Korver on the floor at the same time.
Right.
But, yeah, I think he just slides right into that. And by him playing mostly the three, I think you're going to see Allen's minutes increase at the two. And I think you're going to see, if anything, O'Neal's numbers will go down.
Okay.
O'Neal's just going to have to be clamped down defense because he's the worst offensive player on the Jazz right now.
So therein goes you're perfect. You take me right in my next point. If O'Neal's minutes go down, that's not good defensively because you talked about how bad Alec Burks was defensively. We're bringing in Kyle Korver, who over his career is known for not being a very good defender. So you really didn't get any defense out of this trade either. And now he's going to take minutes away from some of our better defenders. Does it work?
Well, for one thing, Korver isn't as bad a defender as people like to think he is. He's an average defender, really. You look at how he played in Chicago and Atlanta, and even here. I mean, he's not that bad a defender. He's not quick, but he's smart. So he's not a matador out there. But yeah, he's 37. You're not going to count on him to shut anybody down, but that's not why he's there. He can get in front of guys on their first step. Second step, they're going to get by him. But he's smart about where he places his feet, and the payoff on offense is going to be worth whatever you lack on defense. And they're not really giving that much up on defense because Alk wasn't a good defender either. So I think
Okay.
defensively it's a wash, and offensively it's an improvement.
Okay.
And
All right.
you
So
just got that locker room experience. Kyle Korver has spent almost his entire career on teams with winning records. And then he suddenly found himself in Cleveland with LeBron gone. It's the worst team he's ever been on. He's happy to get out of there. He's happy to come back to Utah. He was here during the D-Will years when they were winning. He's coming back now when the Jazz are winning. I mean, they're 10 and 12 right now, but this is a team that's been to the second round of the playoffs the last 2 years. I think they'll eventually turn it around, and I think they also just needed a shakeup. Sometimes teams just need a shakeup to wake them up, to get them working again. And another thing about Korver is the intangibles, the locker room presence, and just the work ethic. You're hearing a lot about the Jazz coaches who've worked with him elsewhere. He did have Quinn Snyder for a year in Atlanta, and I think that's going to be very valuable.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. All right. So let's. I think that hits it for the trade. I know. I had a thought. Oh, we were talking about the money. If people want the specifics on the money, Woj did talk about it in his piece. Alec Burks was set to make $11.5 million this year by the Jazz trading him. They dump that salary. They get something for nothing because he was going to walk in the offseason. Jazz weren't going to sign him. Kyle Korver's making 7.5. He is set to make 7.5 next year. However, if waived by July, then he's only guaranteed to make 3.5. Jazz only have to pay him 3.5 if they waive him by July. If they keep him, they pay him 7.5 next year. I look at that as pretty close to the veteran's minimum. So you're really not losing that much if you keep him next year at the 7.5 either.
Yeah.
So
that's how he is this year. Yeah.
Yeah, and the money makes perfect sense. And so just as much as we talk about the spacing of the floor, I think the money talks big time in this deal. So goodbye, Alec Burks. We loved you. I loved you. I appreciated the excitement and watching you over the years. We're sad to see you go, but Kyle Korver, welcome back. And I did read something the other day that he requested the Utah Jazz as one of those options. And I can't remember where I read that, but somebody from the Clevelander, I don't remember who it was, posted that when talking to Kyle about trading, there were some options, and Kyle basically put on the table, Utah's the place that I want if they'll have me. So it's kind of a marriage made in heaven for both of them, and I'm happy to have him. I do like Kyle, so I'm very happy to have him back. So
yeah, I'm trying to remember how they phrased it. It's like there were a couple teams pursuing him, and he just wanted to go somewhere where he could win. And he was appreciative that it was Utah because he was familiar with them. It was a winning atmosphere. He's played with Quinn before, and it was just an all-around win for him.
Yep.
So happy.
All right. Well, that'll do it for Utah Jazz news this week. Let's move on to NBA news and notes. What do you want to talk about this week?
A bit of controversy going on with other teams. One of the other disappointing teams this year has been the Washington Wizards. They are 8-13. Their big offseason acquisition was Dwight Howard. They had to get somebody to replace Marcin Gortat. Howard has played all of 9 games, and now it looks like he's going to have surgery to deal with some kind of gluteal injury. But the real big news with him was he had an ex-boyfriend out him. And I would say the reaction – there's been a lot of disappointing reactions to it. What?
I said it wasn't very good.
No, lot of gay jokes, a lot of transphobic jokes. All the type of reactions where you can see this is exactly why he did not come out on his own. First of all, it's slimy to out anybody else, especially ex-boyfriends. I mean, come on. If anybody knows, that's just not a cool thing to do. It should be ex-boyfriends, but okay, whatever. So now Dwight's out, and reaction has not been positive so far. It kind of, in a weird way, it kind of explains some things about just kind of how do I say this? How offbeat Dwight Howard is. Now that you know he has this whole other way about him, but I don't know. Overall, I would hope that NBA fans would have had overall would have had a more mature response. There has been a lot of mature responses, but it's been disappointing how many weren't.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was shocked. I was very shocked and disappointed in the way that this was welcomed. I thought we as a society had started to get better. I thought things have been better, and obviously, no, it's not where it should be yet. So I was extremely disappointed in some of the reaction. In addition to what you're mentioning, I just saw some news from Dwight Howard's camp yesterday. It sounds like they're shutting him down for a bit.
Yeah, he's gonna have surgery.
Yeah, so he's down. How long is he out?
I haven't seen a timetable, and I imagine part of that is reflective of how the surgery goes. Now, the Wizards, they were, let me make sure of this, they're 4-5 with him, and they're 8-13 overall. So they're 4-9 without him. So the Wizards are a lottery team this year, and they are. There was an announcement a week or so ago that the Wizards were putting everybody on the trading block, basically. And with Howard going to be gone that much longer, I imagine that's just going to accelerate the process. You got to figure that at least one of John Wall, Bradley Beal, or Otto Porter is not going to finish the season as a Wizard.
Yeah, the Wizards are just a mess. Just a horrible, horrible mess. So,
Yeah, it's not working.
no. Other NBA news and notes. Let's before we get there's a couple things I was going to bring up, but let's go. Last night had an overtime game between the Raptors and the Warriors. The Raptors won at home. Six guys in double figures, including Leonard, who went for 37. But the big news on that side, in a losing cause, Durant goes for 51.
I seem to recall that James Harden had a 50-point game this year where they still lost too.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I did notice in the box score, and I didn't realize this, Draymond Green didn't play. I didn't know this whether Thompson played, but neither did Steph Curry. So it was kind of a one.
Curry and Draymond were out. Thompson did play. He finished with 23 points. Jonas Jerebko, he had 20 points. We miss you, Jonas. Who knew that we really could have used him this year?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, he's been great for them. I knew he would be, but wow.
And the
But yeah, the
Raptors have
Raptors
won.
pull it out.
They've won seven in a row. They're a hot team right
Seven in
now.
a row. They had 37 from Leonard, 26 from Siakam, 20 from Ibaka. And then also double figures from Kyle Lowry, Danny Green, and Jonas V. So they are an
Yeah,
all-around
so.
solid team.
Yeah, they are. It was a good win. Good win for Toronto last night. All right, here's what I wanted to talk about. And prior to starting the show, you and I talked about this. Kind of a weird little soap opera going on at the free throw line this week with a couple of players. They had James Harden get called for lane violation on two consecutive free throws earlier this week. Became kind of a hot topic over social media. Videos were going viral and everything of the situation. So then, a couple days later, you see LeBron step to the line, steps through on his free throw, lane violation, if you will, if you're going with James Harden. But then on his second free throw, before he shoots it, Ken Maurer stops. You see them have an exchange, this look of exasperation on on James' face, and then he doesn't step into the free throw, shoots it, and misses it. What do we make of this going on right now?
Well, you had one ref call the rule as it is on Harden. It's something they don't often do. He called it. He was right. It became national news, and so you know that just kind of rippled through the rest of the refs. Hey, he did this. We're gonna pay more attention to it. And a video instantly came out of the game. It was either the same game that night or the game before with the Lakers, where it showed 10 violations by LeBron that were never called. So then this next game comes up, and LeBron does it, and Ken Maurer, he is aware of what's going on with Harden and how it's gotten all this attention. I imagine he said, hey, I could have called that. You need to make sure that you don't do that. It probably threw LeBron off a little bit. But, you know, that is the rule, and it's good that they enforce it, I think. So,
yeah,
you know, what I also
see coming out of this, John, the NBA referees are under fire right now, big time, I think. I think I've seen a lot being said this season, more than maybe I have in the past. And it could be the change in rules. You've got the freedom of movement rule and whatnot. But it seems to me that the NBA referees are now becoming more under fire than maybe ever before. And whether or not it was the right call to make, I think there's going to be some things kind of be made of this as the season progresses. I'm going to be curious to see where the league goes with this, but is it just me, or does it really seem like there's a lot more questioning going on when it comes to the NBA referees, both on the court and by fans, people watching?
I don't know if it's any more this year than it was last year. I noticed a lot of it last year. And, you know, the NBA is the hardest sport to ref because you have all these things going on. You have to make decisions right away. It's a really hard job, and they go through a lot of training. Now, I've seen some of it blamed on a lot of veterans have retired, and so there's a lot of NBA refs that don't have that much experience. They go through a lot of training. They climb the ranks. They go through, you know, high school, college, professional, and it's a tough job. But I think that I think it's a culture that feeds on itself. I think we've gotten too used to blaming refs, and it just feeds on itself. Players are used to complaining about every call, even when they know they committed the foul, to a point that it's comical. Flopping, you know, just infuriates everybody. That's been an unfortunate addition to the game. I don't know. I haven't seen that many how dare they type reactions with officials this year, at least not any more than there were last year.
Right.
I mean, they're going to screw up the occasional call, but I used to be just so furious with some refs, and I feel justified with some of them, Dick Bavetta. But, you know, they're trying to do their job, and it's the hardest job in the world, really, to officiate. So, I don't know.
Well, I'll be curious as we continue on with this new the thing about the NBA officiating, the rules are constantly evolving. You know, again, freedom of movement added this year. So I'm going to be curious to see how long freedom of movement lasts before they either adjust it or do something with it.
Yep.
So, all right. That does it for this week's NBA news and notes. Normally, right now, we would jump into Devin's quick hits. Devin's not here. We don't have quick hits. But I do want to touch on something. Today, as we record, there's a big football game tonight. John, who wins?
The team that's better than the other team.
Yeah. No, we got the Pac-12 championship tonight, right?
Yeah, I think Utah will win.
Okay. And I got to believe the same. I got to believe that this is Utah's opportunity and that they win. Will it surprise me if Washington wins? No. I mean, you've got two very good teams matched up against each other. Washington's a good football team. So you know, don't sleep on it. But, yeah, Utah should win this game. And then quick thoughts on last week's rivalry game.
I don't know. BYU had that game 1 through 3 quarters, and then they completely fell apart.
Looked like they ran out of gas late in the game, really.
Yeah, and it's really funny when you go through Twitter, and you know how Twitter gets everything out of order. So several hours
Yep.
later, you're seeing all these Ute fans just lamenting and moaning, and BYU fans all happy, and you're like, "Why am I getting stuff from halftime?" But yeah, so I mean, it was a typical rivalry game. It's close. They're always, I'd say, the last eight that Utah's won, seven of them were within single digits, I think. It was just another typical rivalry game where it's close and Utah still wins.
Yeah, and for us BYU fans, it was a tough one to swallow, but again, great game. A classic rivalry game. Also of note, one of the cleanest rivalry games that I've watched in recent years. Not a lot. I think there were only three penalties called in the entire game, and just overall the sportsmanship. I mean, it was just really a clean game.
Yeah.
So. All right, that's enough since we don't have quick hits. That's enough hits on those. Let's move on then to pop culture.
Yes.
John, you saw a movie.
I did. I saw Creed 2, also known as Rocky 8. Have you seen it?
I haven't, and I want to and can't wait to. I really
It's good.
enjoyed the first one, so I do want to see this one.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one as well. Ryan Coogler did not return to direct, but he was a producer on the movie, and I didn't think there was a drop in quality. I thought it was as solid a Rocky sequel as Creed could hope for. Sylvester Stallone co-wrote this one. I don't remember if he had any writing duties on the first one, but it set up a classic scenario where Ivan Drago has been training his son to be a championship boxer. And so he manages to get his son to challenge Adonis, son of Apollo Creed. So you have that whole dynamic going on. It is a little more formulaic this time and predictable. You can kind of tell the path that the movie's going to take, but it's solid all through. Michael B. Jordan's still great in his role. Sly's still good in the Rocky role. It was very cool to see Dolph again. Yeah, there's, I mean, it's just a really solid boxing sequel. It is a satisfying, crowd-pleasing Creed 2, It did exactly what I hoped it would do, and it did it well.
All right, you've seen all the Rocky movies.
Yes.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. Rank them all,
Rank
including
them
these
all?
two. Yes.
Oh, man. As far as enjoyment goes, not in quality order. I think Rocky IV is still my most guilty pleasure one, although I intellectually recognize that the first Rocky is the better movie. I think Creed and Creed II would both be in the upper half. I would just say that Rocky V is the worst and nothing else comes close.
I wouldn't disagree. Wouldn't disagree at
So yeah,
all.
I like the first four Rocky movies. Hated Rocky V. I kind of liked Rocky Balboa. I thought that was a good way to go out. I thought Creed and Creed II have really revitalized and reinvented the franchise in a very effective way. I actually read this article the other day that it said Creed has redeemed the origin of the Rocky movies in that one of the appeals of the Rocky movie was that it was for white guys who always dreamed of fighting Muhammad Ali. And that had never occurred to me, but it kind of made sense when I think about it now. And so now you've got the African American boxer in the protagonist role. And it's not like, well, Clubber Lang was a bad guy, but it's not like Apollo Creed was a bad guy. They were just opponents in
Right.
Rocky One and Two. Rocky III is where his opponent is a bad guy. Rocky IV is his opponent is evil. And it
Right.
kind of went from there. And so, Creed and Creed II, his opponents aren't evil. They have their own motivation and their own lives. And even though, Victor Drago, son of the evil Ivan Drago, there's definite antagonism there. And how do I say it? There's aggression there, but he's not a cardboard villain. I mean, Ivan Drago might as well have been the Terminator. Victor Drago's, you can tell there's a little more complexity to him. He feels like a real person. A real person who would like to redeem his father's name, but He's not just a villain. He's just, he's
Right.
an opponent.
Right. Still to this day, Rocky III, I think, might be my favorite. Only because, and maybe perhaps this is how really silly my argument is, I love Mr. T, and I always have. So
yeah.
that one I enjoyed it from a standpoint of watching Mr. T and watching Rocky and Mr. T duke it out. So kind of a thing I enjoyed. But nothing takes away from the first Rocky. I'm with you. The first Rocky was incredible. But I'm also with you. I think Creed and Creed 2 definitely deserve to be in the top of the list. Or at least Creed. Creed 2 I have yet to see. I will. But Creed 1 I really, really enjoyed as a film. So couldn't disagree on any of your thoughts. All right. So, yeah, Creed 2, go see it. Actually, there's a lot of holiday films out right now, John, that I want to go see. So, and I still need to get out to see them.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's the Wreck-It Ralph sequels out. That's getting really good reviews. I did see Widows. That was really good.
I just saw some friends of mine who went and saw early release of Mary Poppins Returns, and I am seeing early reviews on that suggesting it is fantastic, so I can't wait for that.
Yep.
There's a lot of films out right now that are worth going to see. Take your families, go and enjoy. Okay, so let's move on real quick. Netflix made the news yesterday. Another one bites the dust in the Marvel Universe. This time it was their big one, Daredevil.
Yeah, I did watch the first episode of this season and thought it was good, and I'm going to watch the rest of the season. And then I was really surprised by this news. Although I shouldn't be, but I am.
Right.
Because I was going to watch all of the Marvel Netflix series, and then Iron Fist came out, and I watched one episode, and I went, ugh.
Right.
And honestly, Luke Cage, I kind of had to force myself to get through the last three episodes. It kind of started to drag. And so, you know, after Iron Fist, I didn't have any desire to watch the rest of that. I eventually got around to watching the first episode of Defenders, and it didn't hook me enough to watch the rest of that. Never did watch The Punisher, never did watch season two of Luke Cage or Jessica Jones. But I was going to go ahead and watch season three of Daredevil. So Netflix has canceled Iron Fist, they've canceled Luke Cage, now they've canceled Daredevil. I figure it's a matter of time before we hear that they're canceling Punisher and Jessica Jones, and all the Marvel Netflix series are going to go away, and then likely they'll be resurrected on Disney streaming service that they're starting in 2019. And
Disney Plus.
Yep. Disney Plus, where they've bought Fox, so they're going to get all that library. And so when you think of all the titles and properties that Disney and Fox have, it makes sense, especially since Disney owns the other half of the Marvel deal.
And I was going to say, with Disney Plus, they're already making announcements that their signature series that's going to kick it off is going to be Jon Favreau's Star Wars series, live action series, is going to be one of the things that kicks off Disney Plus. So you have that to look forward to next year. You have the Clone Wars season 6, 7, whatever it is going to come out. And I think it's going to end up on the app. So yeah, there's a lot to look forward to. I too am with you. I was really surprised by this. Probably more surprised that Jessica Jones and Punisher weren't announced before Daredevil. I was going to tell you, keep going on Daredevil. If you haven't seen Defenders, a lot of people told me I needed to see that. I binge watched the 8 episodes, John. It's actually really good. I don't know if you remember season 2 of Daredevil where the Hand made an appearance. Remember that? It was the evil organization, the Hand. It was one that he was originally a part of, and his friend Stick was as well. And
oh,
now they're
yeah,
evil.
Yeah.
So that organization takes forefront in Defenders, and it is Iron Fist, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage battling the Hand. It ends simultaneously where this season of Daredevil picks up.
Okay.
So I didn't watch it, so I came into season 3 not knowing it. it did not change how I felt about season three. But going back and watching Defenders now, I see the connections with between it and Daredevil season three and see why things are where they are. So finish it. It's good. If you want to go back and watch Defenders, I actually found that to be pretty decent. But yeah, I'm like you. I'm surprised. And at the same time, not surprised. Really hope that they resurrect it and bring it to the Disney Plus app next year. If not, I even am really wishful thinking here. I would love to see another Daredevil movie. I really would. I don't know that that's going to happen, but hey, I can fanboy a little bit, please.
They could if they wanted to. I don't think they will. I think they're inclined to. That'd be my guess. My guess is they resurrect it for their streaming series, and you know they're a little smarter about how many episodes each season should have and stuff.
Right.
I don't know. Did you watch season two of Luke Cage or Jessica Jones?
No, I got barely into Luke Cage and barely into Jessica Jones. Jessica Jones was really dark for me, and I had a hard time with that first season, so I really didn't keep going on it. I don't know. Should I have?
I didn't watch them either. I'm just asking.
Okay. Now, I've had some people say that Jessica Jones is the darkest of all the Marvel series that are out there. And I saw that. I could see that. I think I got through about two or three episodes. And she brought an air of darkness, I think, to Defenders a little bit, but not so much. But and she and Luke Cage have a past with each other, because that's where Luke Cage first made an appearance, was also in Jessica Jones. So, I get the connection between all of them, but I had a hard time with Jessica Jones. I haven't even watched Punisher yet, and I enjoyed him in season two of Daredevil. It wouldn't surprise me that Punisher would be a one and done season deal, right? I don't know that they needed to go a full two seasons with that. Maybe one season was enough. I just haven't watched it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
So yeah. All right. Well, I mean, that's the news this week in pop culture. I'm trying to think if I'm missing anything else. Any other announcements? I didn't see announcements. One final note. Did you see the news from, and we should have included this in NBA notes. Did you see what happened with Steph Curry this week?
The shoe thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not end this podcast on a positive note? Young girl playing basketball in her home. I think she lives in California, but anyway, couldn't find a pair of women's Steph Currys. She goes online. They're all listed as men's or young men's. I'm paraphrasing this story, so if I'm wrong, I apologize. But she decides to send a handwritten note to Steph Curry. It took a while. Eventually, and this was before Thanksgiving. Took a while. It eventually got to him. He, in turn, sent her a handwritten letter back. I don't have it in front of me, but it was very nice to see. He said he was really kind of disappointed and frustrated that Under Armour hadn't addressed something like this beforehand, that it would be addressed, that he would make sure it's taken care of. And then he says, oh, by the way, I'm going to send you a pair of these shoes now. And you also get a pair of my brand new line coming out next, that the next brand new line that he has coming out. I thought it was just a wonderful, wonderful story from a guy who is the face in the NBA, who takes time with this young girl to respond to her, not only respond to her, but respond to her in kind in a handwritten note, and offer an offer what he did. I think this is wonderful.
Yep, I agree.
Good news to end the podcast on. I don't think I can't think of anything else. So thank you all for joining us this week. Once again, Devin, we miss you. We hope to have you back soon. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Just look up Jedi and Germs. Please leave us a review. Leave us a review on Facebook. Leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. We would appreciate that. It helps us out. We love that you enjoy listening to us. We'll talk to you very soon. And I think that's it, John. Take us out.
Bye, everybody.